had nowhere to blow but down. A new sound cut through the ringing in Laszlo's ears. Or was it a feeling? A rumbling? A roar? He could hear it with his bones.
Earthquake!
He hollered. The ground beneath their feet might have been the city's floor, but it was also a roof. The roof of something vast and deep. An unmapped world of shimmering tunnels where the Uzumak flowed dark and mythic monsters swam in sealed caverns. How deep it went, no one knew. But now, all unseen, the intricate subterranean strata were collapsing. The bedrock had fractured under the power of the blast and could no longer support the anchor's weight. Fault lines were spidering out from it like cracks in plaster. Huge cracks in plaster. Laszlo could barely keep his feet. He'd never been in an earthquake before. It was like standing on the skin of a drum, whilst some great hands beat it without rhythm. Each concussion threw him, staggering, and he watched in sick astonishment as the cracks grew to gaping rifts wide enough to swallow a man. Lapis paving stones buckled. The ones at the edges toppled inward and vanished, and the rifts became chasms.
Strange!
Ruza hollered, dragging him back. Laszlo let himself be dragged, but he didn't look away. It struck him like a hammer blow what must happen next. His astonishment turned to horror. He watched the anchor. He saw it shudder. He heard the cataclysmic rending of stone and metal as the ground gave way. The great monolith tilted and began to sink, grinding down through ancient layers of rock, ripping through them as though they were paper. The sound was soul-splitting, and this apocalypse was calm no longer. The anchor capsized like a ship. And overhead, with a sickening lurch, the citadel of the Mazarthim came loose from the sky. Chapter 63. Weightless. Feral was asleep in Ruby's bed. Ruby and Sparrow were leaning over the garden balustrade, watching the fire in the city below. Minya was in the heart of the citadel, her feet dangling over the edge of the walkway. Sarai was kneeling on her terrace, peering over the edge. In all their lives, the citadel had never so much as swayed in the wind. And now, without warning, it pitched. The horizon swung out of true, like a picture going crooked on a wall. Their stomachs lurched. The floor fell away. They lost purchase. It was like floating. For one or two very long seconds they hung there, suspended in the air. Then gravity seized them. It flung them. Feral woke as he was thrown out of bed. His first thought was of Ruby. First, disoriented, to wonder if she'd shoved him. Second, as he tumbled, downhill, if she was all right. He hit the wall, smacking his head, and scrambled to stand.
Ruby!
He called. No answer. He was alone in her room, and her room was sideways. Minya was thrown off the walkway, but caught the edge with her fingers and hung there, dangling in the huge sphere of a room, some 50 feet up from the bottom. Ariel stood nearby, as unaffected by the tilt as he was by gravity or the need to breathe. His actions weren't his own, but his thoughts were, and as he moved to grab Minya by the wrists, he was surprised to find himself conflicted. He hated her and wished her dead. The conflict was not to do with her, except insofar as it was her who kept him from dissolving into nothing. If she died, he would cease to exist. Ariel realized, as he plucked Minya back onto the walkway, that he did not wish to cease to exist. In the garden, on the terrace, three girls with lip-stained damson and flowers in their hair. Ruby, Sparrow, and Sarai went weightless, and there were no walls or ghosts to catch them. Or there were ghosts, but Minya's binding was too strict to allow them the choice they might or might not have made. To catch Godspawn girls and keep them from falling into the sky. Bahar would have helped, but couldn't. She could only watch. Hands clutched at metal, at plum boughs. At air. And one of the girls, graceful in all things, even in this, slipped right off the edge. And fell. It was a long way down to weep. Only the first seconds were terrible. Well, and the last. Chapter 64. What version of the world? Laszlo saw. He was looking up, aghast, at the unimaginable sight of the citadel tilting off its axis, when, through the blowing smoke and grit, he saw something plummet from it. A tiny, far-off thing. A mote, a bird. Sarai, he thought, and shunned the possibility. Everything was unreal, tinged with the impossible. Something had fallen, but it couldn't be her, and the great seraph couldn't be keeling over. But it was. It seemed to lean as though to take a better look at the city below. The delegates had debated the anchor's purpose, assuming they kept the citadel from drifting away. But now the truth was revealed. They held it up. Or they had. It tipped slowly, still buoyed on the magnetic field of the east, west, and south anchors. But it had lost its balance, like a table with one leg cut away. It could only tip so far before it would fall. The citadel was going to fall on the city. The impact would be incredible. Nothing could survive it. Laszlo saw how it would be. Weep would be ended, along with everyone in it. He would be ended, and so would Sarai, and dreams, and hope. And love. This couldn't be happening. It couldn't end this way. He had never felt so powerless. The catastrophe in the sky was distant, slow, even serene. But the one on the ground was not. The street was disintegrating. The sinking anchor sheared its way through layers of crust and sediment, and the spidering cracks met and joined and became pits, carving slabs of earth and stone into the darkness below, where the first froth of the Uzumak was breaking free of its tunnels. The roar, the thunder. It was all Laszlo could hear, all he could feel. It seemed to inhabit him. And through it all, he couldn't take his eyes off the anchor. Impulse had drawn him this far. Something stronger took over now. Instinct or mania, he didn't know. He didn't wonder. There was no space in his head for thinking. It was throbbing full of horror and roar, and there was only one thing that was louder. The need to reach the anchor. The sheen of its blue surface pulled at him. Unthinking, he took a few steps forward. His hearts were in his throat. What had been a broad avenue was fast becoming a ragged sinkhole, with black water boiling up to fill it. Ruza caught his arm. He was screaming. Laszlo couldn't hear him over the din of destruction, but it was easy to read the words his mouth formed.
Get back!
And,
do you want to die?
Laszlo did not want to die. The desire to not die had never been so piercing. It was like hearing a song so beautiful that you understood not only the meaning of art, but life. It gutted him and buoyed him, ripped out his hearts and gave them back bigger. He was desperate to not die. And even more than that, to live. Everyone else was falling back, even Errol Fane, as though back were safe. Nowhere was safe. Not with the citadel poised to topple. Laszlo couldn't just retreat and watch it happen. He had to do something. Everything in him screamed out for action, and instinct or mania were telling him what action. Go to the anchor. He pulled free of Ruza and turned to face it, but still he hesitated.
My boy,
he heard in his mind. Old Master Hurricane's words, kindly meant.
How could you help?
And Master Elamaya's, not kindly meant.
I hardly think he's recruiting librarians, boy.
And always there was Thion Nero's voice.
Enlighten me, strange. In what version of the world could you possibly help?
What version of the world? The dream version, in which he could do anything, even fly, even reshape Mazarthium, even hold Sarai in his arms. He took a deep breath. He'd sooner die trying to hold the world on his shoulders than running away. Better always to run toward. And so he did. Everyone else followed sense and command, and made for whatever fleeting safety they could find before the final cataclysm came. But not Laszlo Strange. He pretended it was a dream. It was easier that way. He lowered his head and ran. Over the suicide landscape of the collapsing street, around the turbulent froth of the escaping Uzumark, over churned-up paving stones and smoking ruins, to the sheen of the blue metal that seemed to call to him. Errol Fane saw him and bellowed,
Strange!
He looked from the anchor to the citadel, and his horror deepened, a new layer added to the grief of this doom. The daughter who had survived all these years, only to die now. He halted his retreat, and so did his warriors, to watch Laszlo run to the anchor. It was madness, of course, but there was beauty in it. They realized, all of them, in that moment, if they hadn't already, how fond of the young outsider they'd grown. And even if they knew death was coming for them, none of them wanted to see him die first. They watched him climb over shifting rubble, losing his footing and slipping, rising again to scrabble forward until he reached it, the wall of metal that had seemed insurmountable, shrinking now as the earth sucked it under. Even though it was sinking, still he looked so small before it. It was absurd what he did next. He put up his hands and braced it, as though, with the strength of his body, he could hold it up. There were carvings of gods in just this pose. In the temple of Thakra, seraphim upheld the heavens. It might have been absurd to see Laszlo attempt it, but nobody laughed, and nobody looked away. And so they saw, altogether, what happened next. It had the feel of a shared hallucination. Only Thion Nero understood what he was seeing. He arrived on the scene out of breath. He'd run from his laboratory with his shard of Mazarthium clutched in his hand, desperate to find Strange and tell him. Tell him what? That there were fingerprints in the metal, and it might mean something? Well, he didn't need to tell him. Laszlo's body knew what to do. He gave himself over, as he had to the Mahalath. Some deep place in his mind had taken control. His palms were pressed full against the Mazarthium, and they throbbed with the rhythm of his heartbeats. The metal was cool under his hands, and alive. Even with all the tumult around him, the noise and quaking and the ground shifting under his feet, he sensed the change. It felt like a hum. That is, the way your lips feel when you hum. But all over. He was unusually aware of the surface of himself, of the lines of his body and the planes of his face, as though his skin were alive with some subtle vibrations. It was strongest where his hands met the metal. Whatever was awakening within him, it was waking in the metal, too. He felt as though he were absorbing it, or it was absorbing him. It was becoming him, and he it. It was a new sense, more than touch. He felt it most in his hands, but it was spreading.
a pulse of blood and spirit and power. Thion Nero had been right. It would seem that Laszlo Strange was no orphan peasant from Zosma. Elation swept through him, and with it his new sense unfurled, growing and reaching out, seeking and finding and knowing. He discovered a scheme of energies, the same unfathomable force that kept the citadel in the sky. And he could feel it all. The four anchors and the great weight they upheld. With the one tipping out of alignment, the whole elegant scheme had torn, frayed. The balance was upset, and Laszlo felt, as clearly as though the Seraph were his own body slowly falling to earth, how to put it right. It was the wings. They had only to fold. Only. Wings whose vast sweep shadowed a whole city, and he had only to fold them like a lady's fan. In fact, it was that easy. Here was a whole new language, spoken through the skin, and to Laszlo's amazement, he already knew it. He willed, and the Mazarthium obeyed. In the sky above Weep, the angel folded its wings, and the moonlight and starlight that for 15 years had been held at bay came flooding in, seeming sunbright after such long absence. It spiked in shafts through the apocalypse of smoke and dust, as the citadel's new center of gravity readjusted to the three remaining supports. Laszlo felt it all. The hum had sunk into the center of him and broken open, flooding him with this new perception. A whole new sense attuned to Mazarthium, and he was master of it. Balancing the citadel was as simple as finding his footing on uneven ground. Effortlessly, the great Seraph came right, like a man straightening up from a bow. For the minutes it took Laszlo to perform this feat, he was focused on it wholly. He had no awareness of his surroundings. The deep part of him that could feel the energies followed them where they led, and it wasn't only the angel that was altered. The anchor was too. All those who were standing back and watching saw its unassailable surface seem to turn molten and flow down and outward. Underground, to seal the cracks in the broken bedrock, and over the streets, to distribute its weight more evenly over its compromised foundation. And then there was Rasselas. Laszlo was unaware that he was doing it. It was his soul's Mahalath, remaking the monster as he had in his dream. Its proportions flowed from bunched and menacing to lithe and graceful. Its horns thinned, stretching longer to coil spiral at the ends, as sinuously as ink poured into water, and as the anchor redistributed its weight, seeming to melt and pour itself out. The beast rode it down, ever nearer the surface of the city, so that by the time it stopped, by the time it all stopped, the earth shaking, the grit blowing, the angel taking its new pose in the sky. This was what witnesses beheld. Laszlo Strange in a lunge, head bowed as he leaned into the anchor, arms extended, hands sunk to the wrists in fluid Mazarthium, with the remade beast of the anchor perched above him. It was Scathus's monster, shaped now not of nightmare, but grace. The scene was a marvel. It carried with it the hearts and throat abandon of Laszlo's rush to the anchor, all the certainty of death, and hope like a small mad flame flaring in a dark, dark place, as he had lifted his arms to hold up the world. If there was any justice, the scene would be carved into a monument of demon glass, and placed here to commemorate the salvation of Weep. The second salvation of Weep, and its new hero. Few will ever witness an act destined to become legend. How does it happen that the events of a day or a night, or a life, are translated into story? There is a gap in between, where awe has carved a space that words have yet to fill. This was such a gap. The silence of aftermath, in the dark of the night on the second Sabbat of Twelfth Moon, at the melted north anchor of Weep. Laszlo had finished. The elegance of energies was restored. City and citadel were safe, and all was right. He was suffused with well-being. This was who he was. This was who he was. He might not know his true name, but the place at his center wasn't empty anymore. Blood on his face, hair pale with the dust of collapsing ruins, he lifted his head. Perhaps because he hadn't watched it all happen, but felt it. Or perhaps because it had been easy. He didn't grasp the magnitude, quite, of the moment. He didn't know that here was a gap slowly filling with legend, much less that it was his legend. He didn't feel like a hero, and, well, he didn't feel like a monster, either. Nevertheless, in the space where his legend was gathering up words, monster was surely among them. He opened his eyes, coming slowly back to awareness of the world outside his mind, and found it echoing with silence. From behind him came footsteps, many and cautious. It seemed to him they gathered up the silence like a mantle and carried it along with them, step by step. There were no cheers, no sighs of relief. There was barely breath. Seeing his hands still sunk into the metal, he drew them out like pulling them out of water. And he stared at them. Perhaps he ought not have been surprised by what he saw, but he was. It made him feel inside a dream, because it was only in a dream that his hands had looked like this. They were no longer the brown of desert-tanned skin, and neither were they the gray of grime and sickly babies. They were vivid, azure blue. Blue as cornflowers, or dragonfly wings, or a spring, not summer, sky. Blue as tyranny and thrall and murder waiting to happen. Never had a color meant so much, so deeply. He turned to face the gathering crowd. Errol Fane, Azarine, Ruza, Tzara, the other Tysicane, even Calixte and Thion Nero. They stared at him, at his face that was as blue as his hands, and they struggled, all save Thion, with an overwhelming upsurge of cognitive dissonance. This young man whom they had found at a library in a distant land, whom they had taken into their hearts and into their homes, and whom they valued above any outsider they had ever known, was also, impossibly, Godspawn. Chapter 65. Windfall. They were all so still, so speechless and frozen, their expressions blank with shock. And so this was the mirror in which Laszlo knew himself. Hero, monster, Godspawn. He saw in their shock a struggle to reconcile what they thought they knew of him with what they saw before them, not to mention what they had just seen him do and what it meant, as their gratitude vied with mistrust and betrayal. Under the circumstances, that is, their being alive, one might expect their acceptance, if not quite elation to match Laszlo's own. But the roots of their hate and fear were too deep, and Laszlo saw hints of revulsion as their confusion smeared one feeling into the next. And he could offer them no explanation. He had no clarity, only a muddy swirl of his own, with streaks of every color and emotion. He fixed on Errol Fane, who in particular looked dazed.
"I didn't know," he told him. "I promise you." "How?" gasped Errol Fane. "How is it possible that you are this?"
What could Laszlo tell him? He wanted to know that himself. How had a child of the Mizarthim ended up on an orphan cart in Zosma? His only answer was a buried white feather, a distant memory of wings against the sky, and a feeling of weightlessness.
I don't know.
Maybe the answer was up in the citadel. He tilted back his head and gazed at it, new elation blooming in him. He couldn't wait to tell Sarai, to show her. He didn't even have to wait for nightfall. He could fly, right now. She was up there, real and warm, flesh and breath and laughter and teeth and bare feet and smooth blue calves and soft cinnamon hair. And he couldn't wait to show her. The Mahalath had been right, even if it hadn't guessed his gift. His gift. He laughed out loud. Some of the Tizerkane flinched at the sound.
Don't you see what this means?
He asked. His voice was rich and full of wonder, and all of them knew it so well. It was their storyteller's voice, both rough and pure. Their friend's voice that repeated every fool phrase they threw at him in their language lessons. They knew him, blue or not. He wanted to push past this ugliness of age-old hates and soul-warping fears and start a new era. For the first time, it truly seemed possible.
I can move the citadel, he said.
He could free the city from its shadow now, and Sarai from her prison. What couldn't he do in this version of the world in which he was hero and monster in one? He laughed again.
Don't you see?
He demanded, losing patience with their suspicion and scrutiny and the unacceptable absence of celebration.
The problem, he said, is solved.
No cheers broke out. He didn't expect any, but they might at least have looked glad not to be dead. Instead, they were just overwhelmed, glancing at Errol Fane to see what he would do. He came forward, his steps heavy. He might have been called the Godslayer for good reason, but Laszlo didn't fear him. He looked him right in the eyes and saw a man who was great and good and human, who had done extraordinary things and terrible things, and been broken and reassembled as a shell, only then to do the bravest thing of all. He had kept on living, though there are easier paths to take. Errol Fane stared back at Laszlo, coming to terms with the new complexion of his familiar face. Time passed in heartbeats, and at last he held out his great hand.
You have saved our city and all our lives, Laszlo Strange. We are greatly in your debt.
Laszlo took his hand.
There is no debt, he said. It's all I wanted.
But he broke off, because it was then, in the silence after the earth settled and the crackle of the fire died down, that the screams reached them, and, a moment later, carried by a terror-stricken rider, the news. A girl had fallen from the sky. She was blue, and she was dead. Sound and air were stolen, and joy and thought and purpose. Laszlo's wonder became its own dark inverse, not even despair, but nothingness. For despair there would have to be acceptance, and that was impossible. There was only nothing, so much nothing that he couldn't breathe.
Where?
He choked out. Windfall. Windfall, where ripe plums rain down from the gods' trees, and there is always the sweet smell of rot. The plummet, he recalled, sick with sudden memory. Had he seen her fall? No.
No!
He told himself that it couldn't be her, and he had to believe it now. He would know if Sarai had. He couldn't even form the word in his mind. He would feel her fear, the way he had just before the blast, when that urgency of feeling had hit him, along with Drave's sulfur stink, like a premonition. That could only have come from her, by way of her moth. Her moth.
Something pierced the nothingness, and the something was dread. Where were Sarai's moths? Why weren't they here? They had been, when he lay on the ground unconscious.
You have to wake up now, my love.
My love. My love. And they'd been with him when he staggered down the street toward the fire. When had they gone? And where? And why? He asked the question, but slammed the door on any answers. A girl was dead, and the girl was blue. But it couldn't be Sarai. There were four girls in the citadel, after all. It felt filthy to hope it was one of the others, but he hoped it nonetheless. He was near enough to the melted remains of the anchor to reach back and touch it, and he did, instantly drawing on its power. And Rasselas, Rasselas remade, lifted its great horned head. It was like a creature awakening from sleep, and when it moved, sinuous, liquid, and shook open its massive wings, a bone-deep terror stirred in all the warriors. They drew their swords, though their swords were useless, and when Rasselas leapt down from its perch, they scattered, all but Errol Fane, who was stricken by a terror closer to Laszlo's own. A girl, fallen. A girl, dead. He was shaking his head. His hands balled into fists. Laszlo didn't see him. He didn't see anyone but Sarai, bright in his mind, laughing, beautiful, and alive, as though picturing her that way proved that she was. With a leap, he mounted Rasselas. His will flowed into the metal. Muscles bunched. The creature leapt, and they were airborne. Laszlo was flying, but there was no joy in it. Only the detached recognition that this was the version of the world he had wished for just moments ago. It was staggering. He could reshape Mazathium, and he could fly. That much had come to pass. But there was a piece missing. The most important piece. To hold Sarai in his arms. It was a part of the wish, and the rest had come true, so it had to, too. A stubborn, desperate voice inside of Laszlo bargained with whatever might be listening. If there was some providence or cosmic will, some scheme of energies, or even some god or angel answering his prayers tonight, then they had to grant this part, too. And it could be argued that they did. Rasselas descended on Windfall. It was a quiet neighborhood usually, but not now. Now it was chaos, wild-eyed citizens caught in a nightmare carnival in which there was but one attraction. All was hysteria. The horror of the averted cataclysm had all poured into it, mixing with old hate and helplessness. And as the beast descended from the sky, the fervor rose to a new pitch. Laszlo was barely aware of it. At the center of it all, in a pocket of stillness within the roiling nest of screams, was the girl. She was arched over a garden gate, head tilted back, arms loose around her face. She was graceful, vivid. Her skin was blue, and her slip was. It was pink. And her hair, spilling loose, was the orange-red of copper and persimmons, cinnamon and wildflower honey, and blood. Laszlo did hold Sarai in his arms that night, and she was real and flesh, blood and spirit, but not laughter, not breath. Those had left her body forever. The muse of nightmares was dead. Chapter 66 God and Ghost. Of course it was a dream. All of it. Another nightmare. The citadel's sickening lurch. The helpless silk on Mazathium glide down the seraph's slick palm. Flailing wildly for something to hold on to, and finding nothing. And then... falling. Sarai had dreamed of falling before. She had dreamed of dying any number of ways since her lull stopped working. Of course. Those other times, she'd always awakened at the moment of death. The knife in the heart, the fangs in her throat, the instant of impact. And she'd bolt upright in her bed, gasping. But here she was, not awake, not asleep, not alive. Disbelief came first, then surprise. In a dream, there were 100,000 ways that it might go, and many of them were beautiful. Fox wings, a flying carpet, falling forever into the stars. In reality, though, there was only the one way, and it wasn't beautiful at all. It was sudden, almost too sudden to hurt. Almost. White hot, like tearing in half, and then nothing. Surrounded by ghosts as she had always been, Sarai had wondered what it was like at the last, and how much power a soul had to leave the body or stay. She had imagined, as others had before her and would after, that it was somehow a matter of will. If you just clung tightly enough and refused to let go, you might... well, you might get to live. She wanted so badly to live. And yet when her time came, there was no clinging and no choice. Here was what she hadn't counted on. There was her body to hold on to, but nothing to hold on with. She slipped out of herself with a sensation of being shed, like a bird's molted feather or a plum dropped from a tree. The shock of it. She had no weight, no substance. She was in the air, and the dreamlike unreality of floating warred with the gruesome truth beneath her. Her body. She. It. Had landed on a gate, and was curved over it backward, hair streaming long, ginger blossoms raining down from it like little flames. The column of her throat was smooth cerulean, her eyes glassy and staring. Her pink slip looked lewd to her here, hiked up her bare thighs, all the more so when a crowd began to gather. And scream. An iron finial had pierced through her breastbone, right in the center of her chest. Sarai focused on that small point of red slick iron, and hovered there, over the husk of her body, while the men, women, and children of Weep pointed and clutched their throats and choked out their raw and reeling screams. Such vicious noise, such contorted faces. They were barely human in their horror. She wanted to scream back at them, but they wouldn't hear her. They couldn't see her. Not her, a trembling ghost perched on the chest of her own fresh corpse. All they saw was calamity, obscenity, Godspawn. Her moths found her, those that remained. She'd always thought they would die when she did, but some vestige of life was in them yet. The last tatters of her own, till sunrise could turn them to smoke. Frantic, they fluttered at her dead face and plucked wildly at her bloody hair, as though they could lift her up and carry her back home. They could not. A dirty wind purled them away, and there was only the screaming, the hateful, twisted faces, and the truth. It was all real. Sarai was dead, and though she had gone beyond breathing, the realization choked her. Like when she woke from a nightmare and couldn't get air. The sight of her poor body. Like this, exposed to them. She wanted to gather herself into her own arms. And her body, it was only the beginning of loss. Her soul would go too. The world would resorb it. Energy was never lost, but she would be lost, and her memories with her, and all her longing, and all her love. Her love. Laszlo! Everything came rushing back. The blast, and what came after. Dying had distracted her. With a gasp, she looked up,
braced for the sight of the citadel plunging from the sky. Instead, she saw the sky. Moonlight shafting through smoke, and even the glimmer of stars. She blinked. The citadel wasn't falling. The seraph's wings were folded. Truth skittered away again. What was real? The frenzy around her, already unbearable, grew wilder. She wouldn't have believed the screams could get any louder, but they did. And when she saw why, her hearts, or the memory of them, gave a lurch of savage hope. Rasselas was in the sky, and Laszlo was astride him. Oh, glory, the sight! The creature was remade, and Laszlo was too. He was Laszlo of the Mahalath, as blue as skies and opals, and he took Sarai's breath away. His long dark hair streamed in the gusts of wingbeats as Rasselas came down to land, and Sarai was overcome with the wild joy of reprieve. If Rasselas was flying, if Laszlo was blue, then it was, after all, just a dream. Oh, gods! Laszlo slid from Rasselas's back and stood before her. And if her despair was grim before that surge of joy, how wretched it was after. Her hope could not survive the grief she saw in him. He swayed on his feet. He couldn't get his breath. His beautiful dreamer's eyes were like burnt-out holes. And the worst thing was, he wasn't looking at her. He was staring at the body arched over the gate, dripping blood from the ends of its cinnamon hair. And that was what he reached for. Not her, but it. Sarai saw his hand tremble. She watched him trace the slim pink strap hanging limp from her dead shoulder, and remembered the feel of his hand there, easing the same strap aside. The heat of his mouth on her skin, and the exquisite paths of sensation, in every way as though it had really happened, as though their bodies had come together, and not just their minds. The cruelty of it was a knife to her soul. Laszlo had never touched her, and now he was, and she couldn't feel a thing. He eased the strap back into place. Tears streaked down his cheeks. The gate was tall. Sarai's dead face, upside down, was higher than his upturned one. He gathered her hair to him as though it was something worth holding. Blood wicked into his shirt and smeared over his neck and jaw. He cupped the back of her neck. How gently he held the dead thing that had been her. Sarai reached down to touch his face, but her hands passed right through him. The first time she ever went into his dream, she had stood right in front of him, secure in her invisibility, and wistful, wishing this strange dreamer might fix his sweet grey eyes on her. And then he had. Only him. He had seen her, and his seeing had given her being, as though the witchlight of his wonder were the magic that made her real. She had lived more in the past nights than in all the dreams that came before, much less her real days and nights. And all because he saw her. But not any more. There was no more witchlight, and no more wonder. Only despair worthy of Isagol at her worst.
Laszlo!
She cried. At least she shaped the name, but she had no breath or tongue or teeth to give it sound. She had nothing. The Mahalath had come and remade them both. He was a god, and she was a ghost. A page had turned. A new story was beginning. You had only to look at Laszlo to know it would be brilliant. And Sarai could not be in it. Laszlo didn't feel the page turn. He felt the book slam shut. He felt it fall, like the one long ago that had shattered his nose. Only this one shattered his life. He climbed the stone base of the gate and reached up for Sarai's body. He placed one hand under the small of her back. The other still cradled her neck. As carefully as he could, he lifted her. Strangled sobs broke from him as he disengaged her slender frame from the finial that pinned it in place. When she came free, he stepped back down, folding her to his chest, at once gutted and filled with unspeakable tenderness. Here at last were her real arms, and they would never hold him. Her real lips, and they would never kiss him. He curled over her as though he could protect her, but it was far too late for that. How could it be that in his triumph he had saved everyone but her? In the furnace of his grief, rage kindled. When he turned around, holding the body of the girl he loved, so light, so brutally unalive, the blanket of shock that had muted the screaming was thrown off, and the sound came roaring at him, as deafening as any explosion, louder than the rending of the earth. He wanted to roar back. Those who hadn't fled were pressing close. There was menace in their hate and fear, and when Laszlo saw it, the feeling inside him was like the blast of fire rising up a dragon's throat. If he screamed, it would burn the city black. That was how it felt. That was the fury that was in him.
"You do understand, don't you?" Sarai had said. "That they would kill me on sight."
He understood now. He knew they hadn't killed her, and he knew they would have, given the chance. And he knew that Weep, the city of his dreams, which he had just saved from devastation, was open to him no longer. He might have filled the place at the center of himself with the answer to who he was, but he had lost so much more. Weep and Sarai. The chance of home and the chance of love. Gone. He didn't scream. Rasselas did. Laszlo wasn't even touching him. He didn't need to now. Nearness was enough. Like a living thing, the beast of the anchor spun on the closing crowd, and the sound that rippled up and blasted from its metal throat wasn't fury, but anguish. The sound of it crashed against the screaming and overwhelmed it. It was like color, drowning color. The hate was black, and the fear was red, and the anguish, it was blue. Not the blue of cornflowers or dragonfly wings or skies. And not of tyranny either, or murder waiting to happen. It was the color of bruised flesh and storm-dark seas. The bleak and hopeless blue of a dead girl's eyes. It was suffering, and at the bottom of everything, like dregs in a cup, there was no deeper truth in the soul of Weep than that. The Godslayer and Azarine reached Windfall just as Rasselas screamed. They pushed through the crowd. The sound of pain carved them open even before they saw. They saw Laszlo and what he held in his arms. The slender, slack limbs. The wicking flowers of blood, the cinnamon spill of hair, and the truth that it betrayed. Errol Fane staggered. His gasp was the rupture of the small, brave hope growing inside his shame. And when Laszlo mounted Rasselas with Sarai clutched to his chest, he dropped to his knees like a warrior felled in battle. Rasselas took flight. Its wingbeat stirred a storm of grit, and the crowd had to close its eyes. In the darkness behind their shut lids, they all saw the same thing. No color at all, only loss like a hole torn in the world. Azarine knelt behind her husband, trembling. She wrapped her arms around his shoulders. She curved herself against his back, laid her face to the side of his neck, and wept the tears that he could not. Errol Fane shuddered as her tears seared his skin. And something inside him gave way. He pulled her arms tight against his chest and crushed his face into her hands. And then and there, for everything lost and everything stolen, both from him and by him, in all these long years, the Godslayer started to sob. Sarai saw everything and could do nothing. When Laszlo lifted her body down, she couldn't even follow. Some final invisible mooring line snapped,
and she was cast adrift. At once there was a sensation of unraveling. She felt herself beginning to come apart. Here was her evanescence, and it was like dying all over again. She remembered the dream of the Mahalath, when the mist unmade her and all sense of physical being vanished, but for one thing, one solid thing, Laszlo's hand gripping hers. Not now. He took her body and left her soul. She cried out after him, but her screams were silent, even to herself. And with a flash of metal and a swirl of smoke, he was gone. Sarai was alone in her final fading, her soul diffusing in the brimstone air. Like a cloud of breath in an orchard, when there's nothing left to say. Chapter 67. Peace with the Impossible. The city saw the new god rise into the sky, and the citadel watched him come. The smooth gleam of Rasalas poured itself upward, wingbeat by wingbeat, out of the smoke that still churned, restless, around the rooftops of Weep. The moon was finally setting. Soon the sun would rise. Ruby, Sparrow, and Feral were at the garden's edge. Their faces were stricken, ashen, and so were their hearts. Their grief was inarticulate, still entangled in their shock. They were just beginning to grasp the task that lay ahead, the task of believing that it had really happened, that the citadel had really tilted, and Sarai had really fallen. Only Sparrow had seen her, and only out of the corner of her eye.
"Like a falling star,"
she had said, choking on sobs. When she and Ruby had finally unclenched their hands from the balustrade and the plum boughs that had saved them from sharing her fate, Ruby had shaken her head, denying it, rejecting it. And she was shaking it still, slowly and mechanically, as though she couldn't stop. Feral held her against him. Their rasping, sob-raw breathing had settled into rhythm. He was watching Sarai's terrace, and he kept expecting her to emerge. He kept willing her to. His plea of, "Come on, come on," was an unspoken chant, timed to the shaking of Ruby's head. But deep down he knew that if there were any chance that she was there, that Sarai was still here, he would be marching down the corridor to prove it with his own eyes. But he wasn't. He couldn't. Because his gut already knew what his head refused to accept. And he didn't want it proven. Only Minya didn't dither with disbelief. Nor did she appear to be afflicted by grief, or any other feeling. She stood back by the arcade, just a few steps into the garden, her small body framed in an open archway. There was no expression on her face, beyond a kind of remote alertness. As though she was listening for something. Whatever it was, it wasn't wingbeats. Those, when they came, drubbing at the air and peppered by the amazed cries of the others, brought her blinking out of her transfixion. And when she saw what revealed itself, rising up in the air in front of the garden, her shock was like a blow. For a moment, every ghost in the citadel felt their tethers fall slack. Immediately the feeling passed. Minya's will was reasserted. The tethers once more drawn taut, but they all felt, to a one, a gasp of freedom too fleeing to exploit. What torment! Like a cage door no sooner swinging open than it slammed shut again. It had never happened before. The Ellens could attest that in 15 years, Minya's will had never faltered, not even in her sleep. Such was her astonishment at the sight of man and creature surging over the heads of Ruby, Feral, and Sparrow to land, amid gusting wingbeats, in the patch of anadne blossoms in the center of the garden. White flowers whirled like snow, and her draggled hair streamed back from her face as she squinted against the draught. Mizarthim. Mizarthium. Man and beast, strangers both, blue and blue. And before she knew who, and before she knew how, Minya grasped the full ramifications of Laszlo's existence, and understood that this changed everything. What she felt, first and foremost, faced with the solution to her problem and weeps, wasn't relief, but slow and steady and devastating, like a leak that would steal all the air from her world, the certain loss of control. She held herself as still as a queen on a quell board, her eyes cut as narrow as the heat pits on a viper, and watched them come. Laszlo dismounted. He'd seen the others first, their three stricken faces at the garden railing, and he was highly aware of the ghosts, but it was Minya he scanned for and fixed on, and her to whom he went with Sarai clasped to his chest. They all saw what he held, the unbearable, broken form of her, the pink and red and cinnamon, so brutally beautiful against the blue of her skin and his. It was Ruby who drew in a low, racking sob. Red glimmered in her hollow eyes. Her fingertips kindled into 10 blue tapers, and she didn't even feel it. Sparrow's sorrow was manifest in the withering of flowers around her feet. Her gift, which they had never even known worked in reverse, was leeching the life out of all the plants she touched. And nor did Feral consciously summon the sheaves of cloud that coalesced around them, blocking out the sky, the horizon, the cusp, shrinking the world to here, this garden and this garden alone. Only Minya was purposeful. As Laszlo drew nearer, so did her ghosts. There were a dozen positioned around the garden, and many more inside the gallery, ever ready to repel invasion. And though Laszlo's gaze didn't waver from Minya, he felt them closing behind him. He saw them behind her, through the arcade, and as Weeps Dead answered Minya's call, moving toward the arches that had for 15 years stood open between garden and gallery, Laszlo closed them. Her will summoned the ghosts, and his barred their way. It was the opening exchange of a dialogue in power. No words spoken, only magic. The metal of the arches turned fluid and flowed closed, as they had not done since Scathus's time, cutting Minya off from the bulk of her army. Her back was to the gallery, and the flow of the Mazarthian made no sound, but she felt it in the muting of the souls on the ends of her tethers. Her jaw clenched. The ghosts in the garden glided into position, flanking Laszlo from behind. He didn't turn to face them, but Rasselas did, a growl of warning rumbling up its metal throat. Ruby, Sparrow, and Feral watched it all with held breath. Laszlo and Minya faced each other, and they might have been strangers, but there was more between them than the corpse of Sarai. Minya understood it, even if Laszlo didn't. This Ferengi could control Mazarthium, which meant that he was Scathus's son. And hence, her brother. Which revelation stirred no feeling of kinship, but only a burn of bitterness. That he should inherit the gift that should have been hers, but with none of the hardship that had made her so desperate for it. Where had he come from? He had to be the one Sarai had spoken of, and who had made her so defiant.
"I know a human could stand the sight of me," she had said, blazing with a boldness Minya had never seen. "Because there is one who can see me, and he stands the sight of me quite well."
Well, she'd been misinformed or lying. This was no human. Beasts faced ghosts as man faced girl. The seconds between them were fraught with challenge. Power bristled, barely held in check. In Minya, Laszlo saw the merciless child who had tried to kill him, and whose devotion to bloodshed had filled Sarai with despair. He saw an enemy, and so his fury found a focus. But she was an enemy who caught ghosts like butterflies in a net, and he was a man with his dead love in his arms. He fell to his knees before her. Hunched over his burden, he sank down on his heels so that he was just her height. He looked her in the eyes and saw no